So, here's to this recording. It's September 14th, 2019, and we have just read Deuteronomy 31:14-30, and the Haftarah reading is 1 Kings chapter 2 and the following verses, starting with 1, which we're going to look at in a second. But let's just talk about what we've read. So, go ahead. What did we just read? What are some of the major points here?
Well, I noticed the whole thing. First of all, God says that Moses is appointed to die. And it really struck me this morning, you know, that when I looked at it, that God knows when you're going to die, He knows when you're going to be born, you're going to die. So it was appointed to die, and He's going to, I have this word inaugurate, but you had the word charge.
I was just going to say, it doesn't say a point in the Hebrew here.
A point what?
It doesn't say you're appointed to die in Hebrew. It just says your days are drawing near.
Right.
So that's why translations are always, they're fun, you know, because they give you, I mean, He is appointed to die.
It just says here when you must die.
Right, right.
It's a fact of life, I guess.
So it's interesting, you know, when we read translations, you have to kind of give context and make sense of what you're reading, but I wouldn't preach a sermon on He's appointed to die. I mean, He is appointed to die, right? Hebrews says we're all appointed to die and then the judgment, but so it is a true fact, but it just doesn't say that right here. About what?
This parasha starts at verse 14.
Yeah, so correct.
The verses 1-13 we discussed last week.
And it says He's appointed to die?
No, I'm saying that's part of
the context.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
So we're discussing it again, kind of.
We're going to, yes. Yeah. But Jim has pointed out Moses is going to die.
He's going to die, and he's going to bring in somebody else.
Yes.
To keep on the good work, so to speak.
Yes. Great. So let's start with that. Moses will die, and the person who's coming in is Joshua, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, let me just simplify this. We'll make it like IKEA. Moses, Joshua. Okay. What else did we just read?
I found this out today. Moses and Joshua went themselves with the tabernacle. The Lord appeared in the tabernacle, so appeared in some of both of them.
Yes, okay, so the tabernacle, the Shekinah, but there, here it says the Ohel Moed. But basically we're talking about the same thing here. So they're going to appear in relation. I'm just going to write in English. Tabernacle, tent of meeting. It doesn't actually say tabernacle here, but
I thought the tabernacle and the tent of meeting were two separate.
I mean, they are, but it's like talking about the church and the alt, the narthex in the church, or you know what I'm saying, like. It's all inside the church. It's all related.
Inside the community.
Or the property or the building. So you're right. You're right. They're different, but then sometimes when you're reading, things get blended together. Okay.
There's a learning.
Okay, so learning or teaching? Or
learning,
both?
Like when it says,
doesn't it say he teaches them the...
Yeah, but yes, it does.
Yeah, he's going to teach them the song.
But in verse 13, it says, and your sons that haven't known will hear and will learn.
Verse 13? Okay, well, we read that last.
And also in verse 12, in order that they will hear and in order that they will learn, so that they will
do.
Right. So the follow-on, Sharon, then, is from last week. Is you're to hear and you're to learn, and the way you're going to hear and learn now is from this song, which actually we'll do next week. So we're in between, right?
Right.
Because it's all about this song.
This is the preamble to
it's
the song.
It's the preamble to the song, but it starts last week, in a way, from hearing and learning.
And actually, I want to read last week's verses as well.
Right.
But I first want to do what we just read here. Okay. So, after verse 14, right now.
Yeah, God tells Moses that the people are going to turn away from him.
Okay. They're going to turn away.
Turning
to other gods. What are other choice descriptors he uses for them?
Wickedness. Oh.
Stiff neck.
Stiff-necked.
Rebels. Right?
And God will be angry with them.
God will be angry.
And they are going to forsake him and break the covenant.
Yes. Talk about a negative outlook on life, you know? Everybody talks about God and optimism, but, you know, this is...
But the interesting thing here, he uses the phrase, I will turn my face away, twice. And the first time he's turning his face away from the people because of all the bad they're doing. And the second time he's turning his face away from the bad they did.
Okay.
Oh, well done.
But he's doing this before he's done. They've done it, right?
Right, right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, because normally, you know, it's like, do you see the cup half empty or half full? Well, they haven't done it yet, so why can't you at least see that it's half full rather than half empty? But here...
It's what's called prophecy.
Because it's so imminent. It's going to happen in the next minute. It's happened all the way. It's going to happen in the next minute. And so I know that about you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think because he's talking to the leaders.
Okay, so...
So he's trying to prepare them so that they're not discouraged. That's the whole point of...
But why wouldn't you be discouraged here?
Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah.
Because there's hope in the end.
Okay, but here, why is there hope?
That he's going to turn away from their bad things.
Right. Okay, so there's...
I guess it depends how you interpret 18.
Right.
In 19... The word that struck me was this word lema'an, for the sake of. So it's always, he's going to, whatever he's doing, it's really for his, both the sake of the people that they've got, that they're going to be okay, but also for his name's sake. You know, he doesn't break his covenants. We might break the covenant,
right.
But he stays faithful.
Right.
So that's
in their very mouth, so that this song may serve as my witness. It's kind of like,
yes.
It's hopeless, that part of it.
Okay, I love that there's this song here. It's mentioned four or five times, I think, before you even get to chapter 32. And what are you supposed to do with this song? What's the purpose of this song?
Witness.
Okay,
put it in their very mouths as a witness to themselves.
It's a witness. What else is a witness?
It's kind of like eating the goal, you know, the punishment.
Right, right. It's like maybe put it in your mouth. Maybe that's a way of saying memorize.
Yeah,
you talked about last
week.
Yeah.
Putting it in your mouth and in your heart. God's word is in your mouth and in your heart to do it.
Right. So what else is a witness here in this, what we just read?
The book of the law.
The book of the law, the Torah. Right? Is a witness. And so here I start thinking like, huh, is this song somehow related to the Torah? And then it gives you a whole different view on if we're talking about music here, or if we're talking about a poem that you just recite, or are we talking about, I'm not an expert in ancient Near Eastern songs and what that all entailed, and if anyone in here does have any background on that, well, please chime in, but that, you know, the whole thing with worship songs today and, you know, I guess the power of what are you repeating, and songs, you know, they go inside of you, and it's that stupid melody that you can't get rid of sometimes, of like pop songs, for instance. They're catchy.
But even hymns and psalms that you sing, you know, I mean, here we've got, I proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God. I mean, there's a song, and I mean, it's written in this. And the younger we learn it, the better it is, which goes back to last week, which is this learning and whatever. And somebody was saying to me this morning, they remember a song from Sunday school about something. And I mean, if you remember if you remember songs which are psalms or biblical songs or worshipping the Lord, that's really re-establishing back. If you've been rebellious and hard-hearted and haven't wanted to listen, suddenly that song will penetrate one's thickness, maybe.
Right.
I just think what King David wrote in the Psalms, they don't always rhyme, they always don't fit together, but he calls them songs.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It's a song.
Yeah.
It's a song, a remembrance of some sort.
Yes, yes. And who ends up writing down this song here, what we just read? Moses writes it. Moses is, I mean, you know, he's writing down the Torah,
Moses wrote down this song.
Yeah. Right. So, okay, let's go back to last week's 14 verses, the first 13 verses. And I'm just going to read them real quick. This is Deuteronomy 31, verse 1. Then Moses went out and spoke these words to all Israel. I am now 120 years old, and I am no longer able to lead you. The Lord has said to me, you shall not cross the Jordan. Actually, did you talk about this last week, why Moses is not going into the Promised Land?
Not in detail, no.
Okay, why is Moses not going into the Promised Land? Okay. Everybody knows Numbers chapter 20, verse 12, right? He struck the rock. Right. Instead of speaking to the rock, he struck the rock. Numbers chapter 20, verse 12.
But the reality is that was not his calling. The calling on Moses was, I'm going to call you to bring your people out of Egypt.
Okay.
It never says.
So let's go with that. Maybe his calling isn't to take them all the way to the land. What does it say? What did we just read right here in 31 verse 2? Why is Moses not able to take them into the land?
Well, he's a bit old.
It says he's no longer able to get around.
It was appointed to die.
No, it says la sed de la vo.
I know, but...
Which is often, it's not exclusively maybe, but it's often battles.
At least just... make it ambiguous. It's not clear here, but you could lean towards understanding he's 120 years old. It's time to retire.
Right. And certainly to retire from leading the war. Because what he follows, he talks about Og, Sihon, and Og, which were the two things that Moses actually led them in war.
Militarily.
He was the one militarily that defeated them, or is credited with a military victory.
And just to throw into the mix, look at Deuteronomy chapter 1. Verse 37 and 38. What does it say there? Deuteronomy 1, verse 37.
Because the Lord became angry with me also and said, you shall not enter it either.
And in the context here, he's talking about, Moses in Deuteronomy 1 is talking about the rebellion against the Lord. Like verse 26, you were unwilling to go up. You rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. This is the spies, right? Remember, they come down and they say, there's a bad report, we're scared. And then they get stuck in the wilderness for the next 38 years on top of their 2 years. And you grumbled in your tents, verse 27, the Lord hates us, blah, 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 blah. Then come down to the verse you just read, verse 37. Because of you, the Lord became angry with me also and said, you shall not enter it either. But your assistant, Joshua, son of Nun, will enter it. Encourage him because he will lead Israel to inherit it. So I'm not trying to make any kind of point here. Just in Jewish, ancient Jewish tradition too, the rabbis would have debates over why Moses couldn't go in. And, you know, they point out Deuteronomy 1. Obviously, Numbers 20 is the big one. But there is this discussion, can you merge the two understandings together? We're not going to go into it. But it's just interesting to read the text and find the interesting little bumps that pop out. But the point is Moses is not going in, and Joshua is. And God's chosen Joshua to do this.
Would Moses maybe say to God, give it to Joshua, I don't want it, I'm tired.
Yeah, I mean,
he's old.
It's
the bottom line, isn't it true that he,
mean, Moses didn't do what he said. And so he's not capable anymore. He's doing what he wants.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
that's one part.
But we all don't do it, you know, like there's no leader who's perfect.
To lead.
Right.
And he has done well up until this point.
Right, no, I'm just saying it's there's gotta be more of a story here than just that one thing.
We're also talking about the nature of God.
It makes God too fickle almost.
You know, God doesn't sort of say, right, he's the guy I chose to do X, Y, Z. He messed up, so he's going to change. I mean, God has got a huge plan. This man is too old. Yes, he messed up in the past, and he's already got the warning. Joshua comes along, and Joshua is a young man who actually was obedient and did not rebel. So here we have sort of already set up the successor. And that could be true for any of us.
So I guess things are sometimes gray is what I'm saying when it comes to when you see God work in your life. It doesn't necessarily have to be the specific sign. There can be a conglomeration of things playing into his plan for how you're going somewhere.
Yeah. The question is how he messed up, the severity, and that he was saying, should we bring forth water from this rock? Like, it's all us now. It's not God. And so he wasn't sanctifying God. It was serious because Moses was representative. And if he takes the glory, that's a huge deal. And he
sure.
hadn't been doing that up to then. But you didn't throw in Psalm 106 to the mix.
Go ahead.
That says, talking about the people, they made him, him as Moses, they as a people. They made him angry by the waters of Meribah. And Moses suffered because of them, for they aroused his temper and he spoke rashly.
So Psalm 106 is kind of merging the two ideas together then.
Yeah. So the problem was not that he hit the rock. The problem was that what he's saying and demonstrating to the people was not sanctifying God. He's first of all, he's speaking to them mean and cruelly, but he's also denying God's part in the whole miracle then by saying, should we bring out water from this rock? Here you go.
Okay, but sorry, this is a great discussion. We could have a whole Bible study on this. That was just a rabbit trail I pulled out there. Go back to Deuteronomy 31. But you're definitely,
right.
It's very interesting.
Because people, they were complaining and murmuring all the time, and then Moses must have been like at the end of his rope, you know. And then
that's exactly what happened. He lost it.
And we all have that in us. I think,
it's a vicious cycle, our relationships.
And I read as a Genesis chapter 6 is 3, it's the beginning, the flood, and as the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed a flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. So that's what worries, you know, right?
Right, but other people live past 120 too, so does it mean Moses?
That is, after Moses, there's no one mentioned that. Live longer than 120 years.
Okay. Randy, maybe? Yeah?
Well, two things that come out in this last 5 minute discussion. One of them is how I think this has an effect on me, and I suspect on many people, that when you read the story about how God dealt with Moshe, it makes you always want to step back from being the point person. You do not want to be the point person. If you ever end up as the point person, you bless God, and then you step back, because it's really dangerous being the point person. I mean, that it may not be the intended lesson, but it's there. It keeps getting woven in. That's one item. And the other one, when you went back to read those verses, to me, one of the most amazing verses and encouraging to me in the whole Bible was back in chapter 30, verse 6, where it says, "And the Lord will circumcise your heart." So that back in our Torah, we have a spiritual life that is God-initiated and is supernatural. It's like what we talk about with the New Covenant, and it's already hinted at and, again, woven into the text all the way back in the beginning. And that encourages me, because then I realize the trimmings may change, the decorations may change, but it's the same God of righteousness and justice that is at work, taking all of us over the Jordan or wherever we're going to go, and I'm just going to try to make sure I'm not standing in the point.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you.
I'm sorry?
Uriah.
Thanks.
Uriah would agree with you being...
Oh, Uriah would definitely agree.
So, since we started late... And actually, there's a ton of stuff here. I'm gonna summarize Deuteronomy 31, 1 to 13. I'm gonna point out a couple verses. First off, we have this thing that Moses is not going in, and Joshua is. The second thing it says, there's gonna be enemies to defeat, and the Lord is going to do it. So there's gonna be battles, wars, right? Now, verse 6, this is very important. It says, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. So, I'm going to go back into our text here. And of Deuteronomy 31, and I'm just going to include the whole chapter. And... let's see, be strong and courageous. Do not fear or
be dismayed or discouraged
or terrified. And then it says, he will not leave you
or
forsake you. And by the way, when it talks about the children of Israel, when they forsake the Lord, or they forsake his teaching or his word that we just read in verses 14 to 30, it's the same word there. You have this kind of play, if you forsake, you know, me or my word. It actually says, I will not forsake you. In the context of going into the land and fighting your enemies, right?
So Joshua is listening to all of his heart in this conversation?
Sure.
His heart must have been broken. I think that all of this wickedness is coming, and
yeah.
Another thing, in verse 7, Moses called out to Joshua in the presence of all Israel. So Moses is actually making sure that the person coming after him, that the people recognize that that person is in the same place as he was.
Okay, so let's
he's giving his authority.
Let's point that out. It says, in the eyes of all of Israel. Okay, so there's an audience of Israel. And who else is there? It says in verse like 29, 28. It says the heads of the tribes, the officers, right? Is it 28, 27? Where is it? The tribal elders.
Elders of your tribes and all your officials.
Elders, officers, officials. There's this kind of public.
And then the book he wrote down, he gives to the Levitical priests.
Yes, okay, and there's priests. That's very important. And where did Joshua and Moses, where were they standing when God spoke to them?
Tent of meeting.
Yeah, tent of meeting. Okay.
I also see a strategy. I mean, Moses is talking about the stiff-neckedness and all the problems and everything that they will do. But before he got into that, he mentions a strategy. Take this book of the law and put it beside the Ark of the Covenant, Jehovah. So I'm saying strategy, and I'm also like wondering, you know, is the law, but also the covenant, is put it beside it. What does that actually represent? What does it mean? And I'm seeing a strategy.
So, who are the teachers of Israel? The priest. the Levites, the priests, they are the teachers that's their I mean, part of sacrifice and all this, but they're also the teachers. So it's going next to the Ark of the Covenant and obviously in the tabernacle. And so it's part of their domain. So yes, definitely it's part
their
of
their job is
of the strategy.
Teaching what it is to hear and to learn to fear the Lord. I mean, the back of the verse of last week.
Is the law, but the ark, does that ark represent the presence of God?
Sure.
So you have the law and the presence. You know, and I'm just looking at the strategy even for today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's the presence of God, which everyone's enjoying, but there's also the wisdom and the law.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing is that here, at least, it's on the outside, so that's accessible. Because if someone were to put it inside the ark, basically no one can open it.
Right.
And but if it's right next to it, it's part of the holy presence, like you're saying, the Holy Spirit, but it is accessible to people who need to open it and read it.
So that scripture is really speaking to me today. It's like, and not that I understand it, but I see a strategy, and I'm wondering.
If you look at the New Testament and you see Paul and the writer of Peter, where he says, you know, we are the temple, mm-hmm. and you think about the word that's planted inside of us and the Spirit and the word, and, you know, the Spirit teaches, and there's all of this kind of symbolic stuff going on.
But it's not so symbolic, because what you said before about the hope. So what is happening is God knows what we're like, that we rebel, we don't fear him, we go after other gods, whatever. But he's still saying, you've got the word, you've got it in your heart, you've got it written. There's all the opportunity to come back.
Yeah, and what Trinity is saying about Deuteronomy.
Yeah,
about
don't be the point.
Your hearts will be circumcised.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole issue of
that
hope,
it
really
goes the whole way through, right, way back then, into the New Testament church, and today here.
Now the principle that God still believes in us because he knows his own power. So he can look at you and recognize that you're going to mess up and yet still believe that you can choose the right thing because he's going to empower you to do that.
Right.
So he doesn't get disillusioned when he sees you fall down, basically.
I mean, yeah, maybe we'll end with this. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 2. This is the Haftarah reading this morning, and we actually have a lot, and I'm going to fly here. And can someone read 1 Kings chapter 2, the first 4 verses?
Now the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies, as is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn, that the Lord may fulfill his word, which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons take heed to their way, to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, he said, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. Let's speak.
Okay, so what do we notice here? What pops out?
Amazing.
What are some comparisons to what we just read in Deuteronomy 31?
He's
referring to the fact that they keep what was written in the law of Moses.
Well, first let's start with
who are we talking about here? David is charging his son in the same way as Moses charged Joshua.
Yes, David is charging Solomon.
Yeah.
Okay, and, you know, I love this part, you know, David is known for his songs. He's Psalms, that's, everybody thinks of David, and he's the songwriter. And, okay, so, sorry, I interrupted. Some people had some insights there. What were some of the things that you noticed? What's going on with David here in 1 Kings 2? He's about to die. He says, my days are, it's just like what Moses is saying.
Yeah.
very, you know,
it's very similar.
The context, yeah.
He was also surrounded with a whole bunch of enemies.
He's telling him to be
strong. Yes, so he brings up Torah right here.
Yeah.
And he brings up Moses.
And he brings up Moses, the Torah, Moshe. Yes. So there's an automatic illusion there.
There's a command to watch how you live and walk to be strong.
It says about, back in Deuteronomy, it says they're going to turn from the Dedek away. And here, he also mentions the Dedek. He says about
the way of the Lord, right?
The ways of the Lord. So, plural.
But then you've got to walk before me in truth with all your heart, which is...
And all your soul. Mm-hmm. So what's that make you think of?
The Shema.
The Shema. Deuteronomy 6.
Yeah.
Okay. All of this is fascinating. But if you dig a little deeper and you look over here, crazy stuff starts to happen.
If you read a little further, it's also crazy.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Like mafia.
Of course. Yeah. David's a mafioso here. But we're going to skip that part because we're going to go to Chronicles because Chronicles is he's a great positive editor of David's life. So everybody knows Chronicles is written alongside of Samuel and Kings or is written later after those times, and it's basically telling the same stories of Samuel and Kings, but with a different spin. A more positive look of David and Solomon and the line of Judah.
Here is a issue that the kings were written that focuses on the people in the exile and Chronicles as opposed to you. I think I picked that up in NIV.
Sure, Chronicles comes after the exile, but... right. So basically, right. But I want to go over, for now, and just turn to chapter 22 of 1 Chronicles and look at verse 6. 1 Chronicles 22. We're going to start in verse 6. Listen to this. So David calls his son Solomon, and he charges him to build a house for the Lord, the God of Israel. David said to Solomon, "My son, I had it in my heart to build a house for the name of the Lord my God. But the word of the Lord came to me, 'You have shed much blood and have fought many wars, and you are not to build a house for my name because of the blood you've shed in my sight. But you will have a son who will be a man of peace and rest, and I will give him rest from all his enemies on every side. His name will be Solomon, and I will grant Israel peace and quiet during his reign. He is the one who will build a house for my name. He will be my son, and I will be his father, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom over Israel forever.'" This original story about God telling David, "No, you're not going to build a temple," where is it? It's in 2 Samuel. Right? Chapter 7?
It's about Nathan who comes along.
Exactly. The prophet Nathan is involved in this whole episode because David says, "Nathan, I want to build a temple for God." And Nathan says, "Okay, great." But then that night, God appears to Nathan and says, "No, tell him all of this. You want to build me a house, but no, you will not build a house." In effect, God says, "I will build a house for you." It's a play on words, basically. That it's not the physical house that I'm interested in. It's the line, the house that comes from your lineage of the kings that come out of Solomon and going down into the whole Messianic tradition. But here in Chronicles, it's bringing in, it's explaining why David cannot build a house because he's been a man of war. And so it's interesting, if you follow this parallel here with Moses and Joshua, you know, the reason why Moses can't go into the land, there's the same reason why David can't build the house of the Lord. So the two big...
Yeah, I lost you.
There's two projects going on here. For Moses and Joshua, it's entering the land or inheriting the land. over here? It's building the temple, right?
Right.
These are the projects, kind of like legacy pieces. Okay, let's continue.
And in Samuel, when Eliab comes to him, Nathan the prophet, is it specifically because of Eliab or just vague?
It's vague. It just says, you will not build a house. I will build a house for you. So let's keep reading here. Verse 11. First Chronicles 22, verse 11. Now my son, the Lord be with you, and may you have success, and build the house of the Lord your God, as he said you would. May the Lord give you discretion and understanding when he puts you in command over Israel, so that you may keep the law of the Lord your God. So here we are again with the Torah. Let's see. Yeah, okay, there it is there. And then you will have success if you are careful to observe the decrees and the laws that the Lord gave Moses for Israel. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged. So check this out. You have your strong and courageous. It's a little, one of the words in Hebrew is a little different, but for sure. Yeah. It might not be in this one, but you'll see.
This one is the same.
Okay, this one is the same. But you have this kind of parallel. It's going over into Chronicles. Go to 1 Chronicles 28. Okay. 1 Chronicles 28, verse 1. David summoned all the officials of Israel to assemble at Jerusalem. The officers over the tribes, the commanders of the divisions in the service of the king, the commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds, and the officials in charge of all the property, blah, blah, blah. Verse 2, David rose to his feet and said, listen to me, my fellow Israelites, my people. So this, you see this kind of scene here, this public scene over here now, where it's a public declaration of this is the person who's going to do this big project. He says, I had it in my heart to build a house as a place of rest for the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, for the footstool of our God, and I made plans to build it. But God said to me, you are not to build a house for my name because you are a warrior and have shed blood. Yet the Lord, the God of Israel, chose me from my whole family to be king over Israel forever. He chose Judah as a leader, and from the tribe of Judah he chose my family, and from my father's sons he was pleased to make me king over all Israel. Of all my sons, and the Lord has given me many, he has chosen my son Solomon to sit on the throne of the kingdom of the Lord over Israel. He said to me, Solomon, your son is the one who will build my house and my courts, for I have chosen him to be my son, and I will be his father. I will establish his kingdom forever, if he is unswerving in carrying out my commands and laws, and as is being done at this time. So it's interesting here. Solomon is very similar to Joshua. The command is, yeah, you've got a big project to do. You've got to enter the land, and you've got to build the temple. But the key is, are you going to follow the law, the Torah, God's word? That's the key for both of these replacement leaders, young, up-and-coming leaders. And they weren't even that young, because...
What's so strange, Gary, is that Joshua is being told to go in and take the land.
Yes.
Solomon is being told to build.
Yes.
But that building actually is to do with family building. This is a real... I mean, it's not... We all read it as the temple.
Well, it is the temple, though.
And it becomes the temple at some point. But in fact, this whole thing about being my father, being the son, and so on, it's really strong that you can
There's a relationship there.
It's a whole relationship mm-hmm. thing, and that's what you were saying about the messianic line and the following on. It's as much to do with the relationships.
There's layers here, right?
God being the Father.
Yeah. So, but here's interesting. Look at verse 8. So now I charge you in the sight of all Israel. He's talking to Solomon. And of the assembly of the Lord, and in the hearing of our God, be careful to follow all the commands of the Lord your God, so that you may build this temple.
No, possess this land.
Possess this good land. And the term good land, I'm pretty sure, is a Deuteronomistic phrase.
Uh-huh.
This good land, and pass it on as an inheritance to your descendants forever.
So in effect, you're now connecting, building the temple and the land here in 1 Chronicles 28.
Okay, verse 9. And you, my son Solomon, acknowledge the God of your father and serve him with wholehearted devotion and with a willing mind. For the Lord searches every heart and understands every desire and every thought. If you seek him, he will be found. But if you forsake him, here's that word forsake again, right? Back in Deuteronomy, if you forsake God's teachings or whatever, he will reject you forever. Consider now, verse 10, for the Lord has chosen you to build a house as the sanctuary. Be strong and do the work. Okay, now skip down to verse 19. All this, David said, I have in writing. The word in Hebrew is tavnit. And it's mentioned quite often in this chapter, tavnit, tavnit.
Which verse?
Verse 19. I have in writing. In other words, in Chronicles, David not only wants to build the temple, he's made the blueprints. He's been working on it for years. And he's got it there. And so he's like handing over, okay, these are my sketches that I did here, Solomon. I have in writing as a result of the Lord's hand. And he's saying that these sketches are straight from the Lord. Who does that remind us of the Lord's hand writing something? Like Moses, right? And he's enabled me to understand all the details of the plan.
And even the Torah is written by the finger of God.
Right, right, exactly. Verse 20. So here it is. David also said to Solomon, his son, be strong and courageous and do the work. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord God, my God, is with you. He will not leave you or forsake you until what? It's really amazing. This connection here with the temple and the entering the land, if you spread it out over these four swaths of scripture, that, you know, you have Moses writing the song that's been passed on to generations. You have David writing songs, or in this case, blueprints for the temple and passing it on to the next generations. You have, and they're all kind of tied together with this idea of be strong and courageous, mm-hmm. and
you have a particular mission
accomplished, and in a sense, what's at the center is God's word.
The other interesting thing is that in David's case, he's claiming he got this all from God, but then God specifically told him it's not for you to do.
Right.
So it's like, why didn't God just give all that information straight to Solomon if he was the one who chose to build it? So it's like God has purposely woven people together in such a way that it's always clear it's God and not the people.
Yeah.
The person itself.
Yeah. And in 1 Chronicles 28 and verse 8, you also have this public, it says, he says all of this in the eyes of all of Israel. It's the same phrase in Hebrew as it is in Deuteronomy 31.
It's also a really stark contrast with how David very freely encourages Solomon to do something that he very much wanted to do himself. Like Saul is like trying to kill David. He's like not relinquishing and passing on the kingship. And here David is encouraging Solomon. You're going to get to do it. Here it is. God's going to be with you.
Yeah.
And Saul's like throwing spears at David.
He also stockpiled all the resources. He had all kinds of the resources to do it. So it's sort of like
all the preparation we made at the time, including building plans, is the building supplies.
And I want to just throw one curious rabbit trail here at the end. We all know which book in the Bible has the most mention of songs or music. The Psalms, right? But what's the next book or books in the Bible has to talk about songs or music?
Song of Songs.
Chronicles.
Really?
Yeah. Why is Chronicles have so much mention of music or of songs?
It's part of the temple worship.
If you read Chronicles, a lot of it are these genealogies, and it's very focused on the temple, and it's like it's priestly, what were they called? The 24 divisions. Yeah, right. Priestly, yeah. And so you find it often talked about, you know, the making of music, and this is how they would do it in the temple. This is how they would worship. And I found this very curious thing here in 1 Chronicles. It's 6. Because here, 1 Chronicles 6, yes. Okay, it's talking about Levi, right? It's his genealogy, and he's the father of the Levites, and then the priests come out of that as well. And if you go down to verse 31, it starts talking about the musicians who are in the house of the Lord. Verse 31, what's it say there?
These are the men whom David appointed over the service of song in the house of the Lord after the ark came to rest. They were ministering with music before the dwelling place of the tabernacle of meeting until Solomon had built the house of the Lord in Jerusalem, and they served their office according to their order.
Okay, in the Hebrew it says they would do their service of music. This is before the temple, right? So we're talking about the tabernacle. Of course, the tabernacle was in Jerusalem for a while before the temple was finally built. But they would do it there before the Mishkan Ohel Moed. Where did we talk about the Ohel Moed earlier this morning? The tent of meeting.
When?
Right. Moses. Right? Remember, God said, go and stand in front of the tent of meeting, and I'm going to give you this thing. So what here in 1 Chronicles 6 does it say that the priest, what the priest used to do in this basic same area?
Worship.
Well, worship, but what? But specifically,
music,
but the word is, you know, it's song. Song. And so I just kind of like leave this morning with, remember, we're going into the Song of Moses next Shabbat. It's Deuteronomy 33, and this is all the preamble to the song. And so, you know, this is just a stretch, but is this kind of like a little fossil of where they're receiving a song from God? This is how the priest used to do it. They would be in this area to do their worship of song to the Lord. And so it's almost like another indicator of kind of the song is in this area. And here you are in 1 Chronicles 6. They're talking about it.
And the nice thing is people respond to songs. Like babies, they pick up, you have to intentionally make your voice more like a song, and babies hear it better that way.
Babies so in utero as well.
There's something inherent in humanity that responds to song. It's really fascinating.
But there's a great memory, right? The song is a great memory of what God has done. Like the chronicler, he was trying to tell people after the exile, there's still hope, and he's trying to bring memory. He's trying to focus on the things that God has done in the past. So that's probably why there's a lot of songs in his report. So
and
people remember.
and now is a good time, I guess, for us to go sing songs too, as the service is starting. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Thank you.